You are listening to CEO Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.
Welcome to this episode of CEO Perspectives, a new podcast series by the Conference Board. CEO Perspectives are conversations that take an objective, data-driven look at a range of timely topics that matter most to business executives. To help make sense of these topics and how they'll unfold, we'll sit down with thought leaders and do what we do best at the Conference Board, provide insights for what's ahead. I'm Steve Odlin, the CEO of the Conference Board and the host of this podcast series, and today's conversation will focus on the exodus of women from the workforce. What is going on here? Is this departure driven by the pandemic? Is it something else? Is it a longer-term issue? And what can business do to keep the talent? Joining me today is Camille Olson, the Chair of Complex Employment Litigation and a partner at Seyfarth Shaw, and she's also a trustee of the Conference Board. Camille, welcome.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here today with you.
So, Camille, you have a long work history and a lot of experience around women in the workplace. Talk about your experience.
Thanks so much, Steve. My work with businesses on a global basis really includes counseling employers on best practices for creating inclusive workplaces, assisting companies to build robust policies and practices, looking at the ever-changing dynamics of their workplace and barriers that may exist today that didn't exist yesterday that need to be addressed, and providing frameworks for all employees to thrive, and doing so by creating some systemic change as opposed to just correcting perhaps a temporary imbalance or a particular issue that is raised. I also work with companies to conduct privileged pay equity audits, which are very important to ensuring that a company's pay practices are in fact doing what they intend to do, are fair, equitable, and consistent. I also conduct a lot of privileged outside investigations relating to various issues that are raised by employees and non-employees regarding the workplace. I also develop trainings on non-harassment and instructional and interactive trainings for managers regarding best practices for managing within the law. And I provide training to executives and managers as well on implicit bias issues. My work also takes me to Congress, either the House or the Senate, from time to time to provide viewpoints and information regarding businesses' perspective with respect to potential legislation that will impact the workplace.
Right. So your experience really makes you a tremendous expert around diversity in the workplace and women in the workplace. So, you know, this some of these latest stats, Camille, are really interesting. There still are around 5 million people out of the workforce compared to the pre-pandemic numbers. And the majority of these people are women. What is going on? Why is the majority of the group women? Why are these people still out of the workforce?
There are a couple of phenomena. It's not just one that has led to that overall statistic, Steve. You know, women today account for approximately 48% of the workforce. At the start of the pandemic, it was almost 10 percentage points more. So there's been the greatest exodus of women from the workforce since in the history as a result of the pandemic. Why is that?
So you're saying pre-pandemic women were the majority of the workforce and now they're less than half. That's huge.
It is huge. And there are a number of reasons and unfortunate impacts of the pandemic that have led to that result. One is, millions of female workers are really the main caregivers of not just children in their families, but also parents and other extended family members. And because the pandemic caused a shutdown of schools, of daycare, of other caregivers that have supported women and families throughout the last decade, someone has had to step in to fill that void. And in an overwhelming percentage, that number has been women. So that's one phenomena. Women left the workplace because they needed to be the ones who were caregivers because there was no alternative. That happened immediately. The economy and businesses were not able to assist families in terms of providing alternatives to that. And it's not just, it's interesting, a lot of people think about it in terms of schools are closed. Okay, the schools reopened, but guess what? There are no buses. There's no transportation. So someone has got to be now the person who's transporting children and others. So that's one piece of the phenomena. Another piece of the phenomena is the fact that women are more or overrepresented in industries, hospitality and retail, that were hit harder during the pandemic than other industries. They shut down for long periods of time and displaced in an over more women than men in terms of the shutdown of those businesses. That contributed to it. And I would say there's a third factor, and it's called mental health. And so even those women who did not leave the workforce, some of them have remained in the workforce or have sought other jobs because of the additional burdens of the childcare issues and the family issues I've described, and also because of the additional requirements that literally came as a part of what I called, in my own work, the COVID emergency room, which seems to have been open every single day and requires additional work and work that can't be put off, but, you know, is on top of an employee's everyday work.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that some of the research that we've done at the conference board has really focused on, you know, the strains that women have had, because, you know, they went from, you know, the children or the family or, you know, whatever, they were doing their own thing. They were going to school, their spouses were doing their own thing. And all of a sudden, they're all home. Everybody's home. So women were trying to work remotely while still trying to get their kids on remote learning situations and monitoring that while also trying to, you know, make sure everybody was fed. I mean, it was just, and so the stress levels, when we talked to people about the stress levels, you know, men were radically different in stress levels from women during this period of time, which goes to, you know, your mental health, you know, and I think you were using that as a wide umbrella, but I don't know that people really, you know, who weren't in the middle of this really could understood what was going on at that period of time. But it was a really remarkable period.
Yeah, and it caused a lot of women to also revisit, how am I going to move forward in a healthy way for myself, for my families, and as well as for my occupation? And I would say the biggest word that I've heard from senior executives on this issue is boundaries. The boundaries were gone all of a sudden. Everything bled into each other. Work never ended. And some of us have a different perspective or a different way of interacting with folks in their work lives than they do as a mom or a caregiver. And when that gets melded together, and, you know, your different selves are all together and everybody's seeing them, it caused a stress and a mental health situation, I think, in particular for women, because more of those other parts of their lives came into their work and more of their work bled into their home lives than with respect to men because of the caregiver function.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, you know, typically there's a signal when you're at the workplace or in the workplace, you know, that's work. And then when you're out, that's your personal life. And I think what you're saying is nobody moved. They were sitting wherever they were sitting in their dining room, and the work swirled all around them. And then when, you know, the children went to bed, they still had work to do for in the office, you know, and their companies, and they had to go back. So really interesting.
And Steve, if I could just say, it's another phenomena too. And the phenomena is being present at work and then being present in your personal life. And when those are mixed together, it's very difficult when you have two different really personalities and relationships that you're really forging in those different aspects of your life to be able to handle both of those in a way that's productive for both parts of your life.
Did we see any demographic differences, you know, whether it's generational or other demographic?
We did. By far, if you look at diversity and the intersection of race and women, there is no question that the statistics that have come out during the pandemic show that, in fact, women who are minorities have even been hit harder than non-minority women in terms of both their displacement from the workforce, as well as some of the other different contributors that we've just discussed.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that we're seeing is that baby boomers are leaving the workforce at a much higher rate. So people, these would be, you know, people who would be in their 60s and they're just looking at this saying, okay, I've been out now, you know, I've had enough. It wasn't what I was going to do. It's a couple of years early, but yeah, I'm not going back. It's too dangerous, or I'm done. And so, you know, we're losing a lot of people, including this group of women in the workforce because of that issue as well.
I think you're right. And I think a couple of the factors that have led to the phenomena you describe, Steve, is technology and the facility with technology, which is not as great with respect to baby boomers as it is with respect to millennials and others in the workplace, and the need to incorporate that technology in almost every part of their work as they work during the pandemic. And then I would say the second piece is baby boomers love to get together, right? They love meetings, they love face-to-face interactions. And when part of that joy of work is gone, there is less of an incentive or a benefit to continue down that path.
Yeah, but let me say this about baby boomers, Camille. We can work an abacus, and you know, those other generations, they just can't do it the same way.
fair enough, Steve.
No, listen, you know, if you look at you've presented some charts in a recent meeting, at BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics charts that show departures of men and women by month, and this period in September of 2020 is really telling, where 863,000 women dropped out of the workforce compared to 168,000 men. September just happens to be the time when the kids go back to school. So you're not just getting this information qualitatively, but this was the huge diversion from norm here.
You're absolutely right. And as we all know, in September of 2020, there was little to no in out of home learning for children, as well as for adult children, right? Even in terms of secondary and post-secondary education.
Yeah, so in very, very interesting times. Well, we've talked about why women are leaving the workplace and not returning. Next, we're gonna look at what businesses and governments can do to drive women's participation in the workforce. We're gonna take a short break and we'll be right back.
Interested in this content? You can find this and much more at our Conference Board website, www.conference-board.org. Or even better, contact our membership team and your company can enjoy the benefits of our in-depth research around the economy, environmental, social, and governance issues, public policy, marketing and communications, and human capital. As a member of the Conference Board, you will be able to have full access to all of our cutting-edge research, leading indicators, benchmarking and data services, in addition to webcasts and podcasts such as the one you are enjoying now.
Welcome back to CEO Perspectives. I'm your host, Steve Odlin, CEO of the Conference Board, and I'm joined today by the Chair of Complex Employment Litigation and a partner at Safer Shaw, Camille Olson. So Camille, labor participation, the rate of labor participation is really low right now. In total, it's only 61.6%, which means that only 61%, 61 and 62% of the entire population is working. Now, part of that's because some of them are children, some of our population is retired, but only 57% of women are in the workplace. So this, you know, if you think about this, human capital as a resource of the nation, you know, you do it at that level, this is an enormous amount of our resources sitting on the sidelines. So what should companies be doing differently to attract and retain women and also to bring them back after this hiatus?
You know, there's no single answer to that question, Steve. There are many different programs and policies that are being considered that we see from data are having a real impact. One of them is pay equity audits and employers who are doing a couple of things. How are you effective in making sure that you're paying men and women fairly, consistently, and appropriately based on the work that they are doing and the different skills and experiences that they bring to that work? And in the past, employers have said, well, I'm paying based on the what may be subjective factors, right? The quality of their work. They may have not been required to have a certain level of education, but they had more than what was required, and that does result in a better product or higher work quality. And what employers are doing now is saying, I've got a compensation system that I need to be transparent about with my employees, and that I need to include digitized information regarding the different factors that explain differences in pay. Because if I can't explain it, it's not going to be appropriate for my workplace. So in addition to doing the audits, which employers are doing more and more, and the statistics show that companies that are led in senior leadership by female leaders are more likely to conduct pay audits than other companies. But what they're doing is they're doing those audits, but they're not just using what I describe as a peanut butter approach to where there's a disparity, you fix it in that year and you go on to the next year and just take another look at the statistics at the end of the year in terms of pay. Instead, what the companies are doing is saying, I want to look more holistically at the different pay practices, as well as the policies of this company that will support women in the workplace. One of them, for example, is for a long period of time, and even today, many companies have something called a promotion cap. And what that is it says, if you move within a company in a given year, let's just say at or about the time of performance reviews, you move and you have a promotion, there's a cap on the amount of increase your salary can have. A 10% cap usually is what we see. And because women are less likely to move company to company than men, that has a negative impact in terms of their pay. So many companies are taking a look at that promotion cap issue and saying, I'm going to not continue with that cap because to do so is going to depress the wages of women who are less likely to move between companies in terms of their career, which is where most employees get those big spikes in terms of their pay. So that's one thing that's being done. I would say another very important practice, especially during the pandemic, has been the visibility of concrete actions by senior leaders of companies to connect, not just with their direct reports, but two and three levels down in the organization. We've talked about the exiting of so many women from the workplace, but I think we also need to look at the women that are in the workplace and all employees, really. And it's those individual efforts by senior leaders that then talk about their communications with others. And it may just be a check-in. How are you doing? What's going on? What are you working on? That perhaps was not done before with individuals that weren't in this direct line of interaction with a particular senior leader. I've seen those make significant differences, not just for the workers who are reached out to, but also for the senior leaders in terms of their understanding of the workplace and what employees need.
Right. You know, it's interesting, you know, having been CEO of several companies, we were always advised that you should look at your employees without regard to their personal situations. And so, you know, you should deal with it on the job, in a professional basis and so forth. But going back to our earlier conversation, it seems to me that if all the statistics are right, and I think they are, that women are the primary caregivers writ large, and that's not going to change, it hasn't, over a long period of time, that you can't, as a business leader, you can't not take that into account, meaning that you've got to provide some level of flexibility. You've got to provide some level of time for people. If you're going to bring women back into the workplace, if you're going to retain women in the workplace, you've got to be thinking about the balance of work life and so forth. Talk about, you're an employment lawyer, talk about, you know, the legal aspects of that, and then practically how business leaders should do that.
Yeah, so it's interesting. You describe it, and it's not all about remote work, Steve. It's about workplace flexibility and taking a more granular, individualized approach to it without a question is a way to increase, enhance, and retain the diversity in our workplaces. So it is important that employers and executives not provide those touch points only to women, right? They need to be available to the workforce, but in crafting your policies, in crafting your own personal commitment to engagement with employees, what I do with employers and what I think works really well is to ensure that you are not missing out on the opportunities to connect with every aspect of your workplace and to recognize that they have different, perhaps long-term goals and short-term goals and different needs in terms of flexibility. Flexibility means at its essence, you're not going to have a one-size-fits-all solution, that you're going to take into account individualized differences. And that really, you know, we talk about workplace risks, and you're right. You know, it's easy to just say, this is the one policy and it's unwavering and it's going to be applied to everyone. That really was very popular a number of years ago. That is not what I see in today's business world. It's a much more nuanced approach to have better results.
And what I hear you saying is that flexibility, if applied, you know, across the population, is legal.
Absolutely.
Sounds like an oxymoron, you know. So, but as long as you are offering some level of flexibility, which means that the outcome for any individual employee can be varied as you go, as long as it's offered. That's a really interesting and unique circumstance, because I'm not sure that a lot of people think that that's that's a possible way to go.
Yeah, and you know, in contrast to that, Steve, I would say another very important employer policy is the issue of paid leave, and that be provided equally to men and women. You know, outside the United States, a number of countries, many countries, have paid leave policies that apply to both men and women. And what we've seen in terms of the data in the United States is the more paid leave that is taken by both sexes, the more ultimate equality in experience, length of service, and engagement in the workforce you will see, both on behalf of women and men. So that is something that a lot of folks are looking at in companies to enhance their workforce on a, what I would describe as a more consistent basis, as opposed to the example we just talked about.
Right. So that's a lot that businesses can do. What about the government? What policy changes do you see the government considering?
Yeah. So I would say that there is a lot of interest in providing employers and employees with more information regarding their pay practices and differences in pay between employees. And there are a number of different proposals that are out there, both in the House and in the Senate on that. But what they all have in common is the idea of more transparency, more definitiveness, and more pragmatic information that employers can use. So for example, some of them discuss the idea that we've talked about a little bit here today, Steve, of employer voluntary audits of their pay practices and encouraging those, encouraging and making sure employees know very specifically in laws that they're not going to be retaliated against if they ask questions about their pay. These sound like very simple, probably building block steps that aren't as clear in our existing, you know, federal policies, at least. They are on a state basis. But the more people are talking about them, the more we see employers on a voluntary basis actually capturing these ideas in their own practices and making a difference in the workplace.
Yeah, now, you know, we're seeing a generational shift. We touched on this a moment ago, but we're seeing a generational shift in the workplace. And I think it we're up to, what, about 40% of the workplace, which is made up of millennials, the millennial, so-called millennial generation. But are millennial women in the workplace different from prior generations?
Are they different? They're higher educated. There's no question about that. That is a significant demographic difference. Another difference is an overwhelming majority of millennial women want to have a job and are seeking a job with social impact. That is different from prior generations, that the percentage of that's about 60+%. 90% of millennial women do not want to stay with any particular employer for more than 5 years, believing that a diversity of experience will be overall helpful to their own advancement and learning in life. So those are some trends that we've seen previously. The percentages in terms of the interest in the movement between employers has definitely increased over the last few years.
Yeah, it is interesting. And, you know, a lot of that was structural before. I'm sorry, I'm talking about, you know, millennials staying for a shorter period of time and looking to diversify their experience by companies. In the past, people would stay with one company to build a pension. And, you know, when there were defined benefit pensions, which built over time, the longer you stayed, the bigger the pension, it created an opportunity. Now that we've done defined contribution pensions, which are portable, it erases all of that. And look, there are a lot of reasons for it beyond that, of course, you know, and you know, loyalty goes both ways, yada, yada, yada. But it is the real world that people are moving around more, and it does, you know, it creates opportunities, but it also creates challenges.
Yeah, and the one other point which I haven't mentioned that I think is fair to note is more millennials, including millennial women, are not traditional employee workers. They're independent contractors, they're consultants, they're freelancers. And so when we think about the workplace, and you and I talked earlier about the idea of, you know, we thought we were supposed to be exactly the same for everyone. In terms of independent workers, we thought we were supposed to treat them like they really didn't exist in the workplace. That really has changed. The idea of how to support independent workers in a workplace, including independent women who may be small businesses or freelancers, is now part of the portfolio of diversity efforts of companies.
Really important point, because you're right. I mean, we treated them as contractors who were just, you know, they were out there. It was a transactional thing. But now, increasingly, you know, it's part of the company culture, and that's important for a seamless experience with customers and outside stakeholders.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think you're going to see that part of the workforce growing because of the desire for flexibility and having almost the ultimate flexibility and the building of one's own business. So I think we're going to see additional efforts, maybe different than employee efforts, but efforts that look to support that part of the workforce as well.
Really fascinating comments. Camille, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve. It was really a pleasure having this conversation with you.
And thanks to all of you for listening in to CEO Perspectives. Every few weeks, I'll be joined by a leader from one of our centers or business leaders to provide insights on the issues of our time. We'll cover the leading topics in public policy, environmental, social, and governance, marketing communications, the economy, and human capital. Please do share CEO Perspectives with your colleagues. I know they're going to want to listen. I'm Steve Odlin, and this podcast has been brought to you by the Conference Board.
You have been listening to CEO Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.